before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, and I'm your host, Bill Howell. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of good interviews this month, but let's get started with the news. On October 19th, Zymergy Magazine, published by the American Homebrewers Association, celebrated the 40th anniversary of its first issue. First published in 1978 by Charlie Papazian, the godfather of homebrewing, as he launched the American Homebrewers Association, Zymergy serves the homebrewing community the latest information and advice to support their passion for brewing and drinking quality beer. Quote, "We've come a long way from a 12-page stapled pamphlet to the sleek remastered magazine that we are today," said Dave Carpenter, Zymergy's editor-in-chief. "It's been 40 years since the AHA printed the very first issue of Zymergy, sparking a passion for homebrewing that ignited a craft beer revolution. I can't think of a more fitting way to celebrate Zymergy's 40th birthday than to thank all those homebrewers who have made American beer what it is today. I hope you enjoy the refreshed magazine and continue to feel inspired by what you discover inside." Pint Pass, the free app I featured in last month's Beer Gear segment, is now available to the general public. As I reported, this app actually pays you to visit craft breweries and drink their beer. Pint Pass currently allows one paid brewery check-in per day and a max of 4 paid brewery check-ins per month. A study published in the journal Nature Plants warned of a possible decline in the world beer supply due to the impact of climate change. The production of barley, the main ingredient in beer, is likely to drop substantially because severe droughts and heat extremes will become more frequent as the climate changes, the study says. Quote, "Average yield losses of barley range from 3% to 17%, depending on the severity of the conditions. Future climate and pricing conditions could put beer out of reach for hundreds of millions of people around the world," said study co-author Nathan Mueller of the University of California, Irvine. Researchers used computer models to predict the possible effects of extreme climates on barley yields in 34 regions around the world. They examined the effects of the resulting barley supply shock on the supply and price of beer in each region under several climate scenarios. On average, beer prices are likely to double as less barley becomes available, according to the study. Today, from 6 to 10 p.m., the Mighty Monster Boo Fest will be taking place at the Alaska State Fairgrounds in Palmer. The popular annual Brew Fest is now sanctioned by the Brewers Guild of Alaska and is held in Raven Hall on the fairgrounds. There will be over a dozen local breweries offering their beers and ciders. In celebration of Halloween weekend, there will be a costume contest with great prizes beginning at 9:15. Live music by Agents of Karma starts at 7 p.m., and a silent auction and raffle with prizes is also on the agenda for the evening. Food, including tamales, roasted nuts, and barbecue, will be available for purchase. Big Daddy's Pizza in Soldotna has completed a remodel. It now has customer seating and 10 craft beers on tap. Baleen Brewing Company in Ketchikan received its final approvals from the Alcohol Beverage Control Board on October 8th and has commenced brewing beer. It should be open very soon. The Moose's Tooth in Anchorage was named as one of the top 5 pizzerias in the country by TripAdvisor. Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine selected Anchorage Brewing Company's A Deal with the Devil Double Oak 2017 Barley Wine as one of the best 18 beers of 2018. This beer was aged for 10 months in cognac barrels and another 5 months in Woodford Reserve bourbon barrels. The magazine wrote, quote, "The flavors are both intense yet superbly integrated with the rich caramel, molasses, and burnt sugar base you'd expect from a barley wine, but none of the vegetal or dry wood character one might suspect from a beer that's spent this much time in oak. The sweetness perfectly balances the alcohol content for a richly endearing experience that's warming yet somehow not cloying. At 17% alcohol by volume, it's dangerously smooth and eminently drinkable. Read, not hot. A testament to Gabe Fletcher's deft hand in making bold statements." Kenai River Brewing Company owner Doug Hoag has steadfastly resisted brewing a pumpkin beer. However, two homebrewers in the local area, Leah Vick and Samantha Martin, created a beer that was so good, even Doug couldn't refuse. Recently, the two homebrewers assisted in brewing a commercial-sized batch at the brewery, which will be released later in the year. That's it for beer news. We'll be right back with our first interview with Rick Armstrong of Baranoff Island Brewing in Sitka. He's also the president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. And for our first interview this month, we're very lucky to have Rick Armstrong, the owner and founder of Baranoff Island Brewing Company in Sitka, and also the current president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska. Hey, Rick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bill.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
You bet. Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Why don't you give a little bit of your background and how you ended up running a brewery in Sitka?
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. I've been involved in craft beer since, I guess, back in the 90s. I grew up in Montana and went to school in Missoula. And kind of when craft beer started taking off, I got really excited about it and involved. It's always been on the back burner. In 2010, Sitka didn't have a microbrewery. I thought, why not give it a go? And so went ahead and got a homebrew system, a little 10-gallon Sabco, and just started doing it in the garage. Went pretty well for quite a while, and then upgraded to made a homemade 55-gallon system so we could have a little more product, and that went well. And during this time, I had a full-time job working at a hospital as a biomedical engineer. I went to part-time, and then finally just hung that up, and we got a 7-barrel system. Started supplying around town, around the state. That was 2011, I guess, and just been going forward ever since then. Now we've moved twice. We're in a much bigger location. Just got set up in here last summer, so we just got through our first full year in our new spot. We're still kind of settling in, but we distribute all over the state of Alaska, and we got a handful down in Seattle, counts down there, and just going forward from there.
Yeah, I think you guys, a few years ago, you got some great recognition from the area there where you received a grant, right?
Not a grant, but there used to be a pulp mill in Sitka. They closed the pulp mill down quite a few years ago. There's some job creation money, the Southeast Economic Development Fund. And so we borrowed money from that to get our 7-barrel system. The city and borough of Sitka are actually the managers of the fund. We're making payments back on that loan. That was definitely our major seed fund to get us started.
You're bottling your beer and you're canning as well, right?
We are. We just use 22-ounce bottles, and then we have just a single-head canning machine. So we're real limited on canning. It was kind of a test to see how it would go, and it seems to be going really well. So that's our future, we're hoping. We want to expand into an automated canning line and get a few more styles out in cans.
It does seem to be the wave of the future here in Alaska. Everybody seems to be heading in that direction of cans.
I guess our biggest challenge here in Sitka is like everywhere else in Alaska, but shipping is just, we're so remote and everything coming on a barge, it's pretty expensive, especially with glass. So it definitely helps our bottom line if we can do cans, and I think it's a great product.
I haven't seen your new location, visited the second one, I believe. So why don't you describe that a little bit in case anybody's going to visit Sitka, they know where to find you and what they can expect.
We've never really moved too far. We move about a block every time we move, but so it's not far from where we were at. Most people are familiar with Totem Park. It's our National Historical Park. It's right across the street from us. We get a lot of visitors from the cruise ship, so they'll walk through Totem Park, and you pop out right where we're at, closer to downtown. We're right by, there's a big post office next door. We have a tap room with seating for probably 70, I would say now. We have a nice outdoor deck and a fire pit outside of 3,000 square feet, I guess, inside the brewing facility itself, which is quite a bit more than we've ever had. So that's pretty nice. It's pretty empty right now, but we're working on getting that filled up.
Are you guys serving any food, or do you have food trucks come in?
Yeah, right now we have food trucks, but being Sitka is so limited, you know, as small as we are, there's not a lot. They're mostly just in the summertime. When Sitka is the busiest, we have two or three around town that take turns coming around. We want to get into food. We're really close. We're hoping to have a small kitchen going here soon, actually, though, at least by next spring for sure. But we're hoping midwinter here we'll have some food available in the tap room of our own.
Do you guys have a sort of an overarching beer philosophy, or what style of beers you're looking to brew?
I guess we're mostly ales. We don't really break out of that too often. We have four beers that we distribute, our Spruce Tip Ale, our Silver Bay IPA, our Metabici Stout, and our Talbot Point Hefeweizen. So those are the four I guess we'd be most known for outside of Sitka. The Spruce Tip Ale is kind of turned out to be our flagship. I guess it didn't really start that way, but it just was overwhelming response. You know, the Spruce Tips, they bud in the spring, and so we have huge support of locals around town. We pay $3 a pound for the Spruce Tips, and so they all bring in lots of kids and families, and everybody brings in Spruce Tips, and we weigh them, and we pay them, and we vacuum seal them. There's a charter fisherman across the street from us that has a commercial processing place where he vacuum seals them for us. So we're able to put them up and keep them year-round frozen. So we use quite a bit of, I guess we go through about 3,000 pounds of Spruce Tip a year.
Memory serves you, the base beer is a pale ale, right?
Red ale, sorry.
Red ale, yeah. Okay. So it's a red ale that you're adding Spruce Tips to, yeah. I know I've had it. It's really good. If our listeners are out there or looking for it, I think you can find it locally here in Country Liquors in Kenai. They usually have some of your beers in the cooler there. So what are your long-term plans for the next 4 or 5 years? You're talking about trying to get an automated canner. You have any other big plans?
That's our major push for right now. Yeah, we'd like to expand some tanks, of course, and then automated canner is our main objective right now is just to get more distribution and get things off the islands. That'll be our big push to help us get to that point.
Well, hey, turn your hat around now, and let's talk as the president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska.
You betcha. Yeah, that's my other title.
You know, I think the Brewers Guild has done a lot of stuff in the last few years to get a little more organized and get a little more active. Have you folks hired an executive director yet, or is that position still open?
Well, it is still open. 4 years ago, I was elected as the president of the Brewers Guild, and that was, I think, just because I stepped back and everyone else stepped forward, or however that works. I don't know how that happened, but I ended up in there.
Sounds like you made the mistake of missing a meeting.
Yeah, I think exactly. That's probably what most likely happened. So it's a 2-year term. So the first 2 years there, I muddled my way through it and figured I'd be able to bow out, but nobody was interested in keeping going forward. So I stuck around for another 2 years. During that time, the Brewers Association actually awarded us a grant to hire an executive director where they're going to match the salary. So that was 2 years ago. We hired Guy Ryan to be our executive director. Worked out really well, and then he ended up wanting to move on to other things here about a year ago now, I guess. We've been going through the interviewing process since then. We had some great candidates. We did offer the job to some people, but it just didn't work out with their schedule, what they had going on. And then we have another candidate. Her name is Alex. She's in Ketchikan, and she just accepted the position here a couple days ago. It doesn't include the Government Affairs Committee work, but she's going to do all the executive director festivals, all of our marketing, our emails. She's going to help us with all our book work, I guess you would say. She comes on November 1st as her first day. It's just a part-time thing for her. She's doing 20 hours a week. So we're excited to get some help. It's been kind of a struggle. I got to give the board a huge pat on the back. Everyone's jumped in and helped out here these last 6 months, just trying to keep us all going in the right direction.
Well, good. Glad to hear that the position's been filled and can get going again. Looking at the state of brewing in the state, Alaskan craft brewing, what do you see are the biggest challenges that the brewers are facing right now?
I would say most of our time is spent on Title IV. I mean, we're a hard group just to get together. We're all opinionated, going our own direction, and keep us all on the same page is definitely a challenge. But everyone agrees that they would like to see some changes in Title IV. Seems to get everyone involved and excited.
It seems the Guild is pretty much behind SB 76 with, how can I say it, SB 76 is more or less proposed by Senator Michicki as opposed to some of the revisions that got slipped in later that ended up killing it for last legislative session. So is that going to be the push for the Guild for this coming year to try and finally get over the hump with that?
I'm pretty sure it is. I know a lot of us are really, I guess, wore down. People have been doing this a lot longer than I have. Midnight Sun, for one, and Alaskan Brewing, like, they've all put in years and years into this. So I know people are kind of frustrated that it's not moving forward, but I can't see anyone really giving up just yet either. I think that's the focus of the Guild. It seems to be what everyone wants. So, yes, I definitely see us going forward. Michicki worked really close with us. We really appreciate everything he did for us there and trying to get that bill moved forward. Unfortunately, it didn't work out there at the end. But, yeah, it's definitely a big push for the Guild. The elections are this year, though, so I'll be stepping down this year. I won't be taking the lead next
sure?
year. I am positive of that, yes. So I can't say what their agenda is going to be going forward, but everyone seems to be on the same page as far as getting some changes for our tap rooms.
So one other thing that I wanted to ask you about, I think the Guild is starting to get a little more organized about beer festivals and the criteria you guys are going to use to support a beer festival. Do you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, you bet. We had a committee put together that is taking charge of the festivals, and we're trying to make an accredited or something that we endorse as the Brewers Association, kind of have a set of guidelines that if someone comes to us and wants to do a festival, this is what we would like to see happen. We've got that together. We're basically just trying to get a spot for the Brewers Association at these events where hopefully we can have a table and maybe even get a little money for the Guild. It's definitely something that we are we're still working on, but we've got a good group together. We have Alaska Crafted, which the state was actually behind 2 years ago. That was up in Anchorage. It was the brewers and distillers, and I think the wineries were even there too. Unfortunately, I didn't make it up for that one. They gave us that title, I guess, to run with, so we're kept Alaska Crafted. We did a small version last year. It seemed to go really well. We were hoping to build that into kind of our own large event this year with the executive director position being open, and we weren't able to organize it and pull it off. We are talking about a smaller one, though, at Willowa coming up in November, we're hoping. We're still working out the details if that's going to happen or not. But, yeah, going forward, we hope to have an event, Alaska Crafted event, that's going to be a big event for the BGA yearly.
Well, hey, Rick, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We sure appreciate it. Good luck in everything that's upcoming, and good luck in getting out of being president of the Brewers Guild. Just as soon as you think you're out, they pull you back in. It's like
I'll
the mafia.
Always be around to help. Take a little break and take care of things at home, I guess. Right. But I appreciate you calling me and talking. It's been really nice talking to you, and I appreciate your time and letting me come on the air with you. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, no, we appreciate it. Thanks again. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host, Bill Howell, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We'll be right back after this break.
Hey, everyone. This is Joy, your newest DJ here at KDLL. Every song has a story, and every life has a soundtrack. Join me Sunday nights from 7 to 9 for Songs and Stories, where we'll share some stories and invite guests from your community to play their soundtracks. Right here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. In the first feature story this month, we're going to be talking about seasonal brewing. No, this isn't another rant about pumpkin spice brews or the sad fact that brewing and distribution schedules mean that certain beer styles now have only the vaguest link to the season when they were traditionally brewed. I'm not talking about seasonal beers, I'm talking about seasonal brewing. Prior to the advent of electricity and other technologies, necessity dictated that brewing be relegated to certain times of the year. Access to ingredients and the need for nature to provide adequate brewing and lagering temperatures demanded that brewing was done in either the spring, when beer could be aged or lagered, often in caves, allowing for temperature control despite the weather above ground, or fall, when the cooling weather and the end of the harvest brought ample ingredients and time to brew. Let's take a look at the biggest beer festival of them all, Oktoberfest. The traditional beers served at this fall festival are in a style known as Märzens. If you know German, you know that Märzen translates to March beers. What does this spring month have to do with the beginning of fall? In 1553, the Bavarian Duke Albrecht V issued a decree that made it illegal for brewing in Bavaria between April 23rd and September 24th. The time of the year would be too warm for brewing without risking spoiled beer due to bacterial infection. This meant that brewers ramped up production in March to have enough beer to make it through the next 5 months. March beers were brewed stronger and lagered so they would keep throughout the summer. One of the reasons for Oktoberfest's popularity was that it marked, more or less, the restart of the brewing season and provided a good excuse for drinking up all the Märzen beers left over from the spring. The seasonal nature of brewing prior to the advent of modern technology was a major driving factor in the evolution of what we think of today as seasonal beers. Strong beers like barley wines and old ales required much more malted barley to produce, meaning they could only be made when that ingredient was plentiful, that is, in the late fall or early winter after the harvest came in. Traditional summer beers such as Hefeweizens and wit beers were made to be consumed very fresh before the inevitable bacterial spoilage set in. The list goes on. One of the driving forces behind the development of brewing technology was the growing popularity of lager beers during the second half of the 19th century, especially the Pilsner style. Brewing these beers required fermenting and storage temperatures in the mid-30 degrees Fahrenheit range, which could be difficult to achieve outside of winter in many parts of the world. Ice houses that stored ice harvested from local lakes provided some extension of the brewing season, but were expensive and unreliable. As a historical aside, one of the revenue sources of the Russia-Alaska Company prior to the U.S. purchase of Alaska was harvesting ice from a lake near Sitka and sending it via sailing vessels to breweries in San Francisco. With the demand for Pilsners growing, brewers around the world were eager for some means to free themselves from the tyranny of the seasons. The man who came to their rescue was a Bavarian, Carl von Lind. Around 1870, Lind, a professor at a university in Munich, began to research refrigeration. Lind's first refrigeration system used dimethyl ether as the refrigerant and was built for the Spaten Brewery in 1873. He quickly moved on to develop more reliable ammonia-based cycles. These were early examples of vapor compression refrigeration machines, and ammonia is still in wide use as a refrigerant in industrial applications. With the creation of reliable refrigeration technologies, large breweries around the world were finally able to brew and lager beer regardless of local temperatures. Coupled to the discoveries made by Louis Pasteur at about the same time regarding the spoilage of beer and the effectiveness of heating the beer to prevent this, the process we today know as pasteurization, beer could now be produced year-round and stored for much longer periods. This in turn led to the rise of the so-called beer barons, the creators of the giant brewing concerns we still live with today, like Anheuser-Busch, Miller, and Coors. Here in Alaska, we still have seasonal breweries. Unlike the seasonal breweries of 200 years ago, our breweries aren't hampered by temperatures that get too warm. No, their problems start when temperatures get too cold. 49th State Brewing Company in Healy is a good example. Located just outside Denali National Park, the area sees over 1 million visitors in a typical summer season. However, during the winter, the population of Healy is tiny and temperatures can fall to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So, like most of the businesses in that area, 49th State closes its doors in late September and reopens in late April, coincidentally mirroring the dates of Duke Albrecht, but in reverse. The brewery decided to make a virtue of the necessity of shutting down. Just before closing for the winter, they fill every fermenter with beer that could benefit from a long, cold lagering, and then turn the heat down to just above freezing. These are their hibernation series of beers, which were first released upon the brewery's reopening in April 2013 to wide acclaim. Other breweries in Alaska observe the seasons also, though the season they focused on is the tourist season. Seward Brewing Company only operates from early May to mid-September, when it can count on plenty of tourists from the frequent cruise ship arrivals. Skagway Brewing is unusual in that it operates year-round, though with much reduced hours in the winter. Denali Brewing also keeps its beer garden and restaurant open year-round in Talkeetna, despite low population numbers. Even in the 21st century, here in Alaska, brewing still has to pay attention to the seasons. It's nice that we still maintain a connection to past brewing traditions that many other regions lost long ago. So the next time you order a seasonal beer, be it an Oktoberfest Marzen or something that tastes like an alcoholic pumpkin pie, remember that once upon a time, people didn't drink those beers by choice. They drank them because it was all they had. After the break, we'll be back with an interview with Darcy Knievel of Midnight Sun Brewing Company. This is Bill Howell, drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation, 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.